The San Francisco Experience Podcast, brought to you by Jim Herlihy. Independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience, featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 26, Episode 5, The Chamber of Progress. Talking with CEO and founder, Adam Kovacevic. Hi, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Our guest today is Adam Kovacevic, CEO of the Chamber of Progress, which promotes tech industry policy for a progressive future. Based outside the nation's capital, the Chamber plays a key role in the formation of policy in Washington. They work to ensure that all Americans benefit from technology innovation and that the tech industry operates responsibly and fairly. Adam joins us from his office in McLean, Virginia. Hi, Adam, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Please take a few moments to tell us about yourself and the Chamber of Progress.
I started my career in Democratic politics, worked on Capitol Hill for my congressman who represented the Central Valley of California. He was one of the leaders of what was called the New Democrats in Congress. They were the moderate pro-technology, pro-trade, pro-business Democrats in the late 90s, really kind of in the Clinton-Gore mold. And that sort of set me on my path. I then moved to the tech industry, where I joined Google's Washington office as the seventh or eighth employee, and spent a dozen years at Google, you know, promoting tech policy in Washington. And then I spent 2 years at Lime, which is one of the shared scooter companies. And, you know, one of the reasons why I've always liked tech is because I think tech is helping to advance progressive goals, getting more goods and services and information to more people and at lower cost. And I think these are a lot of the goals that progressives have. But tech as an industry is at a crossroads in terms of how Democratic policymakers approach it. And I think there's concern by a lot of Democrats about the industry's power and size and impact. But I also think there's a lot of optimism, and there's a lot of people out there who would love to see more tech jobs and opportunities come their way. And so that's what we're really focused on as an organization.
Adam, Mark Andreessen of the venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz recently published a manifesto. It was a techno-optimist manifesto emphasizing the benefits of technological innovation. The good news is that he wrote a manifesto, but it begs the question that there are some out there, and some would say many, who are skeptical about the rapid pace of technological innovation. I mean, we can look at autonomous vehicles, we can look at artificial intelligence, to mention but a few. And recently, the Brookings Institution, in a recent American Institutional Confidence poll, showed a drop in Americans' faith in tech from 2018 to 2021. Why are Americans becoming skeptical about the future impact of technology on their lives versus the Chinese and Indians, who are more optimistic about it?
Well, you know, I think that everything we've done in terms of talking to voters is that people would like to see more access to technology, more connectivity, more tech jobs and opportunity coming their way. And unfortunately, I don't think there's necessarily a lot of visionary leadership in government to do that. I think, unfortunately, I think the debate around technology is probably a little too focused on what could go wrong and mm-hmm. how might this hurt me. And, you know, and that's appropriate. Policy should always be looking at that. But I'd love to see more attention paid to how can we preserve our leadership, American leadership? How can we get this technology into more people's hands? Autonomous vehicles, I think, are a great example of that, where, you know, this is a technology that I really believe is going to save lives. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of the conversation really is pretty critical of autonomous vehicles and pretty nervous about them. And I just think that's out of balance to the opportunity that they present.
Well, autonomous vehicles, we were talking about them before we came on the air. And of course, I live here in San Francisco. We have had autonomous vehicles on our streets here in San Francisco, close to my home, for the last 3-4 years or so. And our experience with them, my family's experience broadly, my daughter, her husband, use them all the time in place of taxis. They always have a choice, but when they have the choice, they opt for the autonomous vehicle. Certainly, our experience with them has been a very favorable one. It's, in fact, within 3 to 5 years, once they become available, I'd seriously consider buying one myself. So we had that conversation. Let's talk a little bit more about autonomous vehicles and the adoption of them in broader society. But by the same token, this pushback or skepticism, Americans were always known to be innovative, to try something new. And have we lost that spirit of innovativeness? Have we lost that spirit to try something new? Or was it always like this?
Well, I think it depends on where you look, to be perfectly honest. I mean, one of the challenges of both Cruise and Waymo identifying San Francisco as one of their first target markets is that it's among the least hospitable places and cities in the country for innovation. But to contrast that, if you look at the city of Phoenix, Arizona, where Waymo really has been Waymo's first market to really launch and scale its operations, there's really been nothing but positive reception and welcomeness on the part of Phoenix leaders. The mayor, Kate Gallego, has been an incredible leader in promoting autonomous vehicles to state legislature. And as a result, you know, Phoenix has really probably become the country's leading AV city. And that wasn't by accident. They really decided that this was something they were excited about, held tremendous potential. And, you know, and so you have to credit the leadership in and around Greater Phoenix. I think the contrast, for example, in San Francisco is that for months last year, the city leadership, you know, adopted a policy towards Cruise and Waymo, which was essentially kind of over their dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And they did everything they could to stop the companies from getting approval for operating commercially in the city. You know, we're kind of overstating, in my view, the impact that AVs were having on first responder vehicles. What you've now seen in the 6 months or so since autonomous vehicles have been sort of fully legal for commercial operation in San Francisco is that the public is enamored of them.
Absolutely.
Not just anecdotally, the numbers are off the charts. Thousands and thousands of people have taken rides in autonomous vehicles. Waymo is currently the only company operating in San Francisco, but people are excited about it. And I do think this shows a gap between the city officials, who mm-hmm. are often, unfortunately, stuck in the status quo, and the people, city residents and visitors, who are excited and are curious and are open to this. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to me is an important lesson.
I couldn't agree with you more. City leadership, starting at the mayor's level, the 11 members of the Board of Supervisors, in some ways, with regard to technology, they can be very reactionary. For instance, the flat-out opposition to facial recognition technology a couple of years ago. That seems to have moderated somewhat, but you would think that in the capital of Silicon Valley, which San Francisco likes to consider itself to be, with all due respect to San Jose, you know, in a city like San Francisco, where so many innovators are attracted, and of course, Hayes Valley, one of our neighborhoods, is now known as Cognitive Valley because of the concentration of so many AI firms there. It's a conundrum to me how our leadership is out of step with the spirit of innovation that you do find in San Francisco, and AI is one of the good examples of that. However, this coming November, we have a major election coming up, both for mayor and for half of the Board of Supervisors. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I will say that one of the gaps you see is that artificial intelligence is primarily software, right? At least mm-hmm. for now. So you're not talking about something that sort of has an obvious effect on, say, city streets and things like that. And so autonomous vehicles are a technology which in their own way include artificial intelligence. But, you know, it's something tangible. It's something that you can lay eyes on. You can take a ride in. And so, you know, cities, they become kind of a focal point for city officials in a way that, you know, artificial intelligence doesn't, because it's sort of seen as sort of pure software.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the data as regards accidents or interactions between pedestrians and AVs, here in San Francisco, it's, you know, such data is minimal. There have been minimal encounters between pedestrians and AVs and minimal crashes. The moment that we have one, it seems like every TV channel in San Francisco is out there with a crew to photograph it. But to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever had a fatality with an AV in San Francisco. And overall, I would say certainly my experience with it is very favorable.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's very interesting now is particularly because of Waymo operating now for, you know, year plus in Phoenix, we can now compare humans to autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. And year, researchers working with Waymo published some groundbreaking research based on Phoenix and San Francisco. That was really the first study of its kind to make a kind of a true apples-to-apples comparison of drivers versus autonomous vehicles. And what that study found was that autonomous vehicles reduced crashes mm-hmm. with an injury by an estimated 85% over human drivers, over 6.8 times lower, right? And by the way, that's also probably, we know that human driver crashes are probably underreported. So mm-hmm. that's probably a conservative estimate, right? And so, you know, I think that we know that from what we see in these cities where we see autonomous vehicles alongside humans, that the autonomous vehicles are just clearly safer.
Mm-hmm. Now, Adam, again, here in San Francisco, we've had autonomous vehicles on the road for years. It sounds as though it's a similar situation in Phoenix. At what point will Sacramento or Phoenix license these AVs to take them from the testing stage to let them move into full acceptance? I mean, there's a market out there, probably a small market right now, but there is a market for these cars. How far away are we from having AVs licensed and available for general sale in the California market and the Arizona market, to mention but two?
Well, it's important to say that there's a number of companies with different models. And, you know, primarily what you see are Waymo and Cruise providing a sort of rideshare fleet-based model, right? And so we're not talking about autonomous vehicles to own. We're talking about basically the traditional rideshare model people know from Uber and Lyft,
sure,
but utilizing autonomous vehicles. And so they're not currently aimed at providing autonomous vehicles to own. But frankly, they would probably be quite cost prohibitive right now. You have other companies who are working on different models. Zoox is another California-based company that's working on more of a shuttle-style vehicle that does not have a steering wheel or brake or pedals or side mirrors like the Cruise and Waymo vehicles do. You also have companies like Nuro, which are lower speed delivery only autonomous vehicles that are already operating in parts of Texas, for example. And then you have a whole category of companies that are trying to innovate in driverless trucks, namely Aurora, probably the biggest one. And they are already testing across whole swaths of the South and Southwest. And so, you know, you have different companies trying different models, but in general, they're not aimed at sort of the ownership market.
Mm-hmm. To the extent that the technology has been around for a number of years, how is that technology evolving? Obviously, with practical experience of 3, 4, 5 years on the road, how is that technology different today than it was at the outset?
Well, I think the fact is, you know, with autonomous vehicles, what you're talking about is you're really advantaged by doing, you know, thousands and millions of miles mm-hmm. driven, which is to say that, you know, you want the software to be able to, you know, match what it sees outside the vehicle with something it's seen before, and then adapt based on how the software is programmed. But, and there's a whole sort of, you know, there's a whole host of scenarios that, you know, autonomous vehicle companies have learned from in their testing, learned from in their operations, that have really made the technology better. That's what's so unique about this. You know, human drivers, we don't learn in the same way. We might, but not at the same kind of foolproof way that, you know, that software learns. And so, you know, being able to see, just as an example, let's say that, you know, a dog, you know, were to dart out in front, right? And recognizing, you know, how fast that dog's going to move and where they're moving and how, you know, what type of road is this and how fast am I traveling? And all of that is information that can be programmed into autonomous vehicle software. And so it's really, you know, this is the thing I think people fail to appreciate, that, like, the more you've been doing this, the safer it's going to get.
How do you respond to the critics? I disagree with this, but playing devil's advocate, how do you respond to the critics who say AVs, autonomous vehicles, are essentially a sort of a plaything of techie people, and it's not a really compelling use of technology that consumers are demanding, are asking for today, as they are in other technological fields? How do you respond to that?
Well, I think you always have to be careful, because people, you know, it's not often the case that a consumer requests specifically what they want.
Yes.
And sometimes that they, you know, it speaks to a need they might have, but they might not be able to vocalize it, or they might lack the kind of the broad vision to be able to seek it out. So I think that this is something where, look, it's not yet widely available. We're talking about, you know, two cities, soon three cities, where, for example, Waymo's operating. But I think it will be. And I think one of the things I've noticed about autonomous vehicles is that I think there is a, you know, initial hesitation. Why would I get in that driverless vehicle? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, I think there was the same initial hesitation around things like Uber and Lyft when they were first getting being introduced. Why would I get in a stranger's car? That seems crazy. So, you know, I think that it's understandable and normal that there would be a bit of a cycle there that people go through. My experience riding autonomous vehicles is that they become, after a period, almost boring. And I think that's a, you know, that's a good thing. You go from kind of like, oh, this is incredible, to, yeah, I'm going to get on my phone and kind of, you know, putter around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I couldn't agree more. Now, of course, we're talking about the adoption of autonomous vehicles in the United States. Are there any, what about overseas? Is there a similar trial period in other countries around the world, in Asia and Europe, or are we in the lead here in the United States?
We are in the lead, but I think our biggest potential rival is China, in that they have made more of a concerted effort policy-wise to, you know, to promote autonomous vehicles. And, you know, we're at risk. You ask, I think, you know, one of the things is China has treated autonomous vehicles like a sector to, you know, to really be to champion. And I worry that we haven't been that deliberate here in the United States about a championing it. And so, you know, I think that we could stand to see much more active leadership by the American government in saying, like, this is a sector we want to lead in.
Why do you think the Chinese are championing AV, and of course we're not, but why would, what the Chinese see in the future of AV that we're missing?
You know, I don't know. I think that they just, you know, they don't have necessarily the same, you know, they can have more of a top-down approach and say, look, this is a sector that's strategically important for us and that we want to lead in, and then, you know, there's not the same kind of debate, right? We have debate in our country,
yes,
right? So, for example, you know, we have, in this country, we have elements of organized labor that have proposed bills that would require human drivers to be on autonomous vehicles, which means they're no longer
autonomous.
You know, and that's great. I don't favor those bills, but it's good that we have a democratic system that allows those bills to be debated. And, you know, and I think that's the difference. We have a democracy here.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? How
it can be messy sometimes.
Yes, democracy can always be messy. How does the insurance industry view AV technology? On the one hand, if the stats are saying that it's safer for pedestrians, fewer accidents, etc., you would think that would be a plus. So how does the insurance industry view autonomous vehicle technology, and are they a proponent of it?
You know, I think that's an interesting question, because you're not talking about, you know, generally it's a different proposition. There's not going to be as much need to insure an end driver, but people aren't driving themselves. And, you know, I think that this is going to be, it's going to be safer, right? And so people are going to be getting less accidents. Is the insurance industry like that or not like that? To be honest, I don't know. And I'm not sure I care too much, because I know it's going to be better for safety. And if that's makes it worse for the insurance industry, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. On Capitol Hill, of course, I'm sure you're on Capitol Hill frequently and talking with legislators and their staff, etc. Who are the supporters on Capitol Hill of AVs? Are there any congressmen or Congress members or senators who are in favor of the technology and who are eager to promote it?
You know, I think that truthfully, we've seen more leadership on autonomous vehicle policy from states. Congress really has been very slow to take any meaningful action on autonomous vehicles. And of course, Congress is, you know, largely dysfunctional. And so, you know, but it's also true that states in general are the main regulators of the roads and road usage rules. And so, you know, they're the ones who kind of deciding when and how autonomous vehicles can ride on their roads. And so, you know, really most of the action here is at the state level.
Mm-hmm. And that's California and Arizona.
I mean, there are other states that have authorized this. And again, many states across the South and Southwest have already authorized autonomous vehicle operations. Texas certainly has. Colorado certainly has. and New Mexico, and trucking is a big, big area
sure.
of operations and exploration for those states as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, in the remaining few minutes of the podcast, what are your closing thoughts about encouraging Americans to see the benefits of technological innovation in general, and specifically in the case of AV?
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, we know that the autonomous vehicles are safer. I think this is incontrovertible at this point. And, you know, one of the things that I think is unfortunate is that we have cities that have adopted, you know, what are called Vision Zero plans to reduce the number of traffic-related fatalities, mm-hmm. but they're really just nibbling around the edges of the problem, right? The reality is autonomous vehicles don't drive drunk. They don't drive distracted. They are the best way to tackle the problem of road safety. And yet we see a reluctance. And I just think, you know, it's time for policymakers, it's past time for policymakers to get more serious about the technology that holds the most promise for reducing accidents and fatalities on our roads.
What other projects are you working on at the moment, and what are the priorities apart from AV? What are your other priorities at this point?
Well, we work on, in addition to autonomous vehicles, we work on delivery issues, we work on workforce issues, we work on artificial intelligence and speech issues, online speech issues, the whole gamut of crypto technology. I think we're really concerned that, you know, more people should have access to technological innovations, that these things, you know, look at like financial services, they've increased people's access to banking. And yet there's sometimes a wariness. And I think that it's just important to remember that a lot of new technology has helped advance goals, particularly that progressives have really cared about.
Mm-hmm. And Adam, how can our listeners follow you?
I'm on Twitter at Adam Kovac, and our organization is Chamber of Progress. We're at progresschamber.org.
Okay, Adam Kovac, K-O-V-A-C. Adam, I'd like to thank you for having joined us today. I think the mission of the Chamber of Progress is very impressive, long overdue. And,
thank you.
You know, there are so many skeptics out there. I think you're addressing much of that skepticism and bringing, you know, strong arguments to bear on Capitol Hill and other state capitals and legislators. So Adam Kovacevic of the Chamber of Progress, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jim.
And for our listeners, today's episode is number 512. Listen to us on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, 18 platforms, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And join our listeners in 60 different countries. FeedSpot has recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast, ranking us number 12. This has been the San Francisco Experience Podcast with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.